Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everyone. I am Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for April 13th, 2012, episode 380. And today's sponsor is Kentucky Performance Products, and Glenn is gone, and I am so excited to introduce you to my guest next after we play this.
I can't take it anymore.
Thank God it's Friday.
I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
We work all week so that we can eat and own a little piece of God's ground. Pushing papers and pens, red tape never ends. The stress can turn a smile into a frown. I need some horsing around.
Friday morning to everybody. Check this out. Glenn and Jennifer are long gone. It is me holding down the fort, and I thought, who would I like to spend an hour plus talking to? Well, there's nobody who holds my attention more than one, Daniel Stewart. So I'd like to welcome Daniel to the program. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning, Jennifer. Good morning, everyone. It's nice to spend the morning with you.
Well, it is nice to spend the morning with you, but you got to, Jennifer's not here. She is gone. It's Jamie. You're dealing with just Jamie today. No Glenn, no Jennifer, you're all mine for the entire show.
Those are some pretty big shoes to fill. I'll do my best.
That's a funny joke.
But then again, I don't exactly know how big Glenn's shoes are. I'm not implying anything, but I'm not sure. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah, I don't know either. Let me just tell everybody a little bit about you. I stole your bio from your website. So let's see here. Daniel Stewart is a successful international trainer and instructor for over 25 years. You have taught riders in Spain, Portugal, Canada, Mexico, Belgium, the UAE, Greece, and the West Indies. You have coached riders on U.S. equestrian teams, world championship teams, world equestrian games, and the Olympics. You are an author, and you are the leading expert on equestrian sports psychology, biomechanics, and athletics. Now, why I was really excited to have you on the show today is because you're actually going to be in my area next week.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, where will I be? I think I'll be out at Carefree Farms next Saturday and Sunday, working with your area's U.S. Eventing Association. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I have to admit, Scottsdale, Phoenix, that whole area, probably one of my favorite areas in the whole world. I just think it's paradise out there. So I can't wait to come out, work with the great riders there, and spend 2 or 3 days in your wonderful corner of the world.
Well, you know, you couldn't have picked a better time. It has been just absolutely gorgeous weather-wise. So hopefully it'll stick for the whole next week and it won't turn into a Phoenix summer too terribly early because it does get hot.
You're going to get it. It's not a matter of if, is it? It's just when it's going to hit.
Absolutely. But I definitely recommend January, February. That's when people come visit me and then I don't see them for the rest of the year. Because nobody wants to come and hang out with me in the middle of the summer here.
Yeah, I have the same thing. I live in Naples, Florida, and in the winter we have the winter, the snowbirds come down here like they do to Phoenix, and it's then that you can't even drive through the city without spending the evening at some red light.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
It is interesting, but then all of a sudden in the summer it's like so peaceful and quiet.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna enjoy the peace and quiet during the summertime, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, Daniel, before we get into your traveling and your amazing ability to talk people off the ledge, if you will, which you have done to me a couple times to help me prepare for competitions, I would be remiss if I did not tell everybody that the world lost an amazing, amazing woman yesterday. Amy Tryon was a member of the horse community, a friend of the Horse Radio Network, an amazing horsewoman, an Olympic athlete, and a true hero, and she passed away in her sleep due to unknown causes. A little background is Amy began eventing at the age of 8 and hasn't stopped in the next 30-plus years. She represented the U.S. on 2 Olympic teams, 2 World Equestrian Game teams. She won a team gold medal from the WEGS in Jerez in 2002, a team bronze from the Athens Olympics. She was Chronicle of the Horses, Eventing Horseman of the Year in 2006. Her accolades go on and on and on. In addition to representing her country at the highest level of eventing, Amy Tryon was actually also a professional firefighter for many years. So this is just an amazing, tough woman. And I talked to one of her friends last night, and she told me how Amy, she's like, everybody's just devastated. And she said that a woman like this was so tough. She said that she had a fall, and she couldn't remember if it was the WEGS or the Olympics, and got back on after falling off her horse, because that was when you still could get back on, and finished the course, then show jumped the next day. And after about a week, Amy was like, talking to her husband, I still have a little bit of back pain. So he makes her go to the doctor. Turns out she has a broken back and broken x-rays, and competed the rest of the Olympic Games with a broken back. And they would not have medaled without her score. And so they ended up with the bronze medal. So because of her, she was just that kind of tough competitor. So I want to let everybody know that the Eventing Radio Show is going to be doing a tribute show for Amy that's going to come out next week. Chris Stafford's going to be sitting down and talking to, Karen and David O'Connor and other eventers about the life and career of Amy Tryon. So it is with an unbelievably heavy heart that we give our deepest condolences to everyone involved with Team Tryon Eventing, her fans, her friends, and especially her family. And I know that Glenn prepared a small statement that he recorded yesterday before he left. So we're going to go ahead and play that now.
Hi, Glenn here. On behalf of everyone at the Horse Radio Network, we wanted to send our condolences to the family of Olympic eventer Amy Tryon. Amy died in her sleep 2 nights ago. Amy and her husband Greg have been great friends of the Horse Radio Network and the eventing world as a whole. Greg appeared in our first Horse Husbands episode many years ago. She will be sorely missed by everyone. Chris will be doing a segment in her honor on next week's Eventing Radio Show. Our thoughts and prayers go out to Greg and the family and to the whole equestrian world, who has left one amazing person today.
Now, Dan, did you, obviously working with eventers, you had to know of Amy Tryon.
Yes. And I, you know what, I've always sort of lived by a particular quote, a particular saying, a particular way of life. And that quote is this: your horse doesn't care how much you know until he knows how much you care. And Amy was the one person who you knew every time she pulled up to, regardless of, which horse trial, which event it was, you knew that Amy was that person. You knew that Amy was the person who was going to be there earlier than anybody else, later than anybody else, try harder than anybody else. And I knew Amy well enough to know that she lived that quote every day. Her horses knew how much she cared, not just when she was on them, not taking care of them on course, but when she woke up early in the morning to go and care for them, when she stayed late to continue that care for them. So as Glenn and both of you stated, the eventing world in whole, perhaps the world in whole, has lost a wonderful wonderful young lady. What a shame. Yeah. However, how many of us would give anything to have achieved what she achieved in her life? In my line of work, we talk about memory motivation, focusing on positive memories. You know, oftentimes we get stuck in negative memories. We get stuck thinking about the fall that happened last week, and we can't get beyond it. It's a form of memory motivation, but it's a negative memory, and that negative memory can hold us back. I do know that Amy lived a life of positive memories. And I wish at some point that her friends, her fans, and her family will be able to see through this and remember all those positive memories that she shared with us.
Well said, Daniel. Well said. And you know, it's tough to move on from something like that, but we do have the rest of the show. So thank you, everybody, and you know, thoughts and prayers to Amy and her family. Now, Daniel, you're going to be coming to Phoenix, Arizona next weekend to do a clinic. And, you know, I want you to describe to everybody, because I've been reading a lot on what your clinics entail, because I think I'm going to be involved with this one. And, you know, I've had a friend that has clinicked with you, you know, Colleen down at, she was in Florida, and she has done a bunch of clinics with you and swears by it. She says it's amazing. You'll learn so much. I, however, am not quite sure what I'm getting myself into. So can you just kind of take us through what one of your clinics is?
Yeah, you need to be careful, because when you come in clinic with me, you're going to get yourself into a lot. the majority of my clinics, they tend to be two-day clinics, and they're not exactly run-of-the-mill clinics, because you know, many clinics will sort of last an hour or two. On average, my clinics will last 7 or 8 hours a day. So the way a normal clinic would work is this. In general, we tend to start a little bit late, probably around noon. On Saturday, I'm going to be teaching something called a video analysis clinic. And it's exactly what it sounds like. What I end up doing is for the first 35 or 40 minutes, I videotape the riders, and there may be 10 or 12 riders in the group. So I'll videotape those riders. Next weekend out in Carefree, Arizona, I'm going to be working with the U.S. Eventing Association. So whenever I work with the eventers, I'll videotape a little bit of their work on the flat, excuse me, and a little bit of their work over fences. Once I have everybody on the videotape, then we sit in front of a TV for an hour and a half or 2 hours, and we do a frame by frame video analysis. You know, and we've seen other sports do this. We've seen golfers do these frame by frame analyses. We've seen swimmers, skiers, tennis players do them, and the value is incredible. There's kind of a neat saying: in order to solve things, sometimes we need to see them. So the technique is called "see it to solve it." We can look at a rider who their leg swings at the canter, and they'll say, yeah, I know it swings at the canter. It's been swinging for years. I've been doing all I can to stop it from swinging. But then as soon as the rider sees it on the videotape, that's when they can start to really understand it. So the video analysis is kind of neat. It's not about identifying the leg swing at the canter. It's about identifying what causes the leg swing at the canter. And there are three causes of the leg swing at the canter. So what we'll do is we'll videotape the riders. We put them on the TV. We'll watch a rider. When we see that rider and we identify, well, let's say that we see their leg swing. As soon as we see the leg swing, we'll watch it in regular motion. Then we'll freeze it and we'll rewind it. And then we'll watch it in slow motion so we can really see it this time. Then we'll freeze it again, rewind it, and watch it frame by frame by frame. And what we're going to do is we're going to keep watching the leg swing of the canter until we can figure out what's causing it. So once we see the leg swing, I'll talk about the three causes of the leg swing at the canter, and then we'll just simply look up through their body. Is it the knee? Is it the hip? Is it the shoulder? What could be causing that swing? Once the rider and the group, because the video clinics are, I believe, one of the best clinics in the world to audit, because there's so much learning going on. So once we identify what causes the leg to swing, then we'll look at the jumping position. Do we jump in front of the motion? Do we land in one stirrup? Do we twist? Do we duck? What do we do over our fences? Once the riders have looked at their flat position and their position over fences and learned not just their imperfections but their strengths as well, what they do great, once they identify what their strengths and weaknesses are, once they identify the causes of the weaknesses, then we get back on our horses, and that's when we do the lesson. So many clinics, you know, I'll show up and I'll teach a lesson. This lesson doesn't start until the riders have looked at their own position for a couple hours and figured out what might be causing some of their imperfections. So it's a pretty neat clinic because the first hour we videotape the riders. The next 2 hours we do the frame-by-frame analysis. And then after that we do follow-up lessons. We split the group into smaller groups, and then each of the riders get to work on exactly what they saw on their videotape. So it's a pretty great clinic because the riders aren't just going to be told what to do. They're going to see what they already do, and then they're going to understand what might be causing any of their imperfections. After the riding lesson, after they've worked on what they saw in the videotape analysis, we take a break. Oftentimes we'll bring in pizza or go to a restaurant, at which time I'll do the sports psychology seminar. So it's in the evening, usually on Saturday evenings, when we open the doors to a big equestrian sports psychology seminar, at which time we talk about, you know, any tools that we can use to overcome show jitters, develop positive focus, set achievable goals, use our mind in addition to our body. I really do believe that the world is full of good mental riders and good physical riders, but we create the great rider when we bring those two together, the good mental and the good physical coming together to create the great rider. So anyways, that's my normal Saturdays. It's about a 7.5 or 8 hour clinic. About 4 or 5 of those hours are on the horse, and then the last hour and a half is that really important equestrian sports psychology seminar. Then on Sundays we meet together, and I teach a series of clinics called the Psycho Clinics. It's exactly what mm-hmm. they sound like. They're a mental training tool for equestrians. Many of us work Monday to Friday as hard as we can, developing a great leg, a great seat, a great position. But then on the weekends we go to a horse show or a rating for pony clubbers or a horse trial or something like that for the eventers. On the weekends, we go to compete and show off what we've learned Monday to Friday through all that hard work on our leg, seat, and posture. But we get nervous. We get tense. We feel the pressure. We feel distracted. And unfortunately, on the weekends, sometimes it really counts, that's when the pressure gets the best of us. So psycho clinics are just they're a great tool that help us to figure out how to deal with pressure. So instead of me teaching a regular jumping clinic, I teach a jumping clinic under pressure. So I pressure the rider, I rush the rider, I distract the rider, and I see how they handle it. And then once we identify how they do handle or not handle the pressure, then I'll teach them tools of how to stay focused, get their head in the game, rise above the pressure. So by the end of the day on Sunday, the riders have ridden in jumping clinics under pressure, and they've learned tools how to cope with that pressure, how to rise above that pressure. And then on Sunday afternoon, oftentimes what we'll do is the equestrian fitness workshop, you know, proving that through the whole weekend, you know, it could literally be a 17 or 18 hour weekend with me, that in order to create the great rider, we focus on the development of the good physical and the good mental, knowing that when those things come together, we create some pretty huge potential in each of my riders.
Wow,
so anyways,
amazing.
That's a long weekend.
Because you talk about, you know, you basically break everybody down before you build them back up. So I love this idea, and my God, I would be a nervous wreck filming myself because I can't even, Daniel, I can't even listen to these radio shows again later on. Like, I can't even listen to them again because I pick apart myself way too much. And here you are having people pay and volunteer to be picked apart after being videoed. But that is the best way that you learn. When I was doing, you know, like real radio, not that this is real radio, but when I actually was a DJ, the worst thing that they would do to you was record you messing up. Then they would sit you down and play you messing up to you over and over and over again. And then like trying to be, and to me, what that did was that just shattered my confidence because there was no like build up. But here you're taking the next day and you're building them back up and you're teaching us how to overcome that. What an amazing whole package for the entire clinic. I just, I love it. How are these received? They're very well received.
You know what? I'm going to say something. In the early years, 15 or 20 years ago, when I started teaching, especially the video analysis clinic, because you're right. You know, we have a choice. When it comes to making mistakes and errors, we're all going to do it. But we have a choice. We can learn from them, or we can learn to regret them. In my playing the radio spots over, you know, for you again and again, we can learn from them, or we can just learn to regret them, not want to experience them. I think in the very beginning, my video analysis clinics, obviously they delivered a great message. But I'm not so sure that, 15 or 20 years ago that it was as well as accepted as it is today, perhaps because nobody was doing it 20 years ago, you know, regardless of any sport. But I think the big difference has been, you'll see it next week if you can join me, is that there's a great deal of humor in this video analysis clinic. In my job, if I can, there better be, because if it's going to be 2 hours of constructive criticism, sit in a room and watch what we're doing right and wrong, I think if we do that, there's always the possibility of, you know, of getting somebody in there and having somebody disappointed. I didn't realize I was doing this. I didn't realize my leg was so bad. I didn't realize my seat was so bad. So the video analysis clinic is incredibly well received now, because if I do a good job, I will have that room laughing for the full 2 hours. Not
wow.
at each other, but for example, and this is such a great example, when we talk about the two-point position, I can talk about the mechanics of the two-point. So the center of gravity over top of the heels, the center of gravity over top of the center of the saddle, not elevated, not sitting, not two-point, not three-point. The shoulders need to stay still. When the hips go back, we want to soften the hands, let them come forward. I can talk about all of the mechanics of the two-point position like that, because it's valuable. They're valuable mechanics. But what I believe has happened over the last couple of years is I've been able to match those mechanics with humor. So one of the ways that I teach the two-point position is called the potty squat. Okay? And the potty squat, I'm not going to take credit for, because I think she must have been an 11-year-old. The little girl taught me the potty squat. So the potty squat is a two-point position. She says, when I'm at a horse show and I go to the bathroom, when I go to the porta potty, I've got to go to the bathroom, but I ain't touching that thing. So she goes, I just spread my feet, I put the weight in my heels, I push my hips back, and I just hover a little tiny bit. I just hover. I'm not touching it. So I hover. I let my hands go forward so my hips can go back, and I keep my eyes up. I am not looking down. Okay? So she calls it her two-point position the potty squat. So anyways, Jimmy, what I'll do is I'll videotape a rider in the two-point position. We'll see them go across the screen in slow motion and frame by frame. We might, for a split second, talk about the mechanics. We want to keep our hips over top of our heels, center gravity over top of our base of support. We might talk about that for a split second, but what we're really going to hit on is the potty squat, so that if I can deliver a constructive criticism with a little bit of humor, then I do believe that the humor takes away the sting. You know, and I just think it's a neat concept. So the clinics, I believe, are wonderfully well received. I get emails day after day. If I teach a Saturday, Sunday clinic until Wednesday, my email box is full of wonderfully positive comments about how I've been trying to stop my leg swinging for years. I have been trying to sit up straight for years. I've been told my back has been round for years, and it's gone. It's fixed. And it's not because of the mechanical part of the video analysis clinic. I think it's because of the humor. Another tool that I use to help the riders sit up straight, we can say open your shoulders, flatten your back, but that does not work nearly as well as the Wonder Bra technique. So the Wonder Bra technique is just very simply the most wonderful equestrian, you know, logo in the world, lift and separate. You know, so I'll have a group of 40 people, 39 of them women, they'll be sitting in my class, and I'll ask everybody to, you know, sit up tall, lift and separate. And as they do that, they laugh, but they're opening the shoulders. They're bringing their chest forward. So
yeah.
It's a neat clinic, wonderfully well received, because the mechanical information, which is important, I guess, it's a video analysis clinic, the technical mechanical, you know, position analysis is important. But I think what really, really takes a sting away and what really helps to solidify the information are the 100 silly, dumb little jokes that I'm going to tell during this analysis.
I did hear that about you, that you do tell lots of dumb jokes. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
Hey, we actually, Daniel, we have a caller on the line who does not need any work on her two-point position, because I have seen her ride, and she's a fabulous rider and also the organizer of the clinic. We have Dr. Jennifer Miller on the phone with us. Good morning, Jennifer.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, I'm freezing in lovely St. John's. I'm at a horse trial in Arizona.
Oh, my gosh. Did you make the trek up there? That is the one thing, Daniel, about eventing in Arizona, is there is nothing close. The closest event is Flagstaff, unfortunately, which is like maybe 2 hours away, 2.5 hours. Now, Jennifer, how long did it take you to get to St. John's?
Well, I have to admit, I didn't take the direct route. I took the rather scenic route.
<Uh-oh>.
So it took me about 5.5 hours. It really should have only taken me about 4.5.
Wow.
And that's a close event for us.
No kidding, because I went to Galway 2 weeks ago, and it's like 6.5, and then we went to 3-day ranch, of course, which was snowed out, and that was a good 6.5. So it is just, it can be exhausting eventing in Arizona, and the gas prices are really helpful too, aren't they, Jennifer?
Oh, yeah, you bet. And they're calling for rain and snow tomorrow.
Ah! Oh, no! That's just not normal when you're from Phoenix. Now I know Jennifer because I evented with her coach for a little while as well, Frederick Boulan, and Dr. Miller has been kind enough to, you know, you know when you're standing next to a vet, you're like, hey, I got a question for you. Can you look at my horse real quick? I've pulled that on Jennifer a couple times. I'm so sorry. I'm sure you hate that. But Jennifer is a very accomplished eventer and a wonderful veterinarian and also the organizer of this clinic. So we've got Daniel on, and Daniel suggested that we give you a call and talk to you about what's going to happen here in Arizona next weekend.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to the clinic. We have 2 days set up. You know, in the throes of organizing, but I really wanted to. I've seen Daniel at a talk at a couple of the annual meetings for the USEA, and I was very impressed. And he hits on some things that personally are kind of near and dear to my heart. And I also thought for the area that it would be an excellent alternative to having a quote-unquote big-name professional rider come in and teach for a clinic. So I thought it would be something different for our Area 10 to get this the kind of information that Daniel has to offer. And on a personal level, I'm hoping that he can make some changes in my ride, because much of what, when you've ridden a long time, you can get into some serious bad habits, and correcting them is extremely difficult. Short of a shock collar, I don't know what you do. but I know that body awareness is so important, and if there are some, you know, some key indications that can possibly be imparted to give me some skills to be able to make the changes that I intellectually know I need to make, and hopefully based on that and the fact that I'm going to see some video of me making the mistakes that I want to correct, and hopefully Daniel can impart some wisdom on from a psychological point of view as to how to make the changes.
Now, Dr. Miller, what is the biggest one thing that you get picked on? Barbara Crabo yells at me 1,000 times each lesson to shorten my reins. Shorten your reins, shorten your reins, shorten your reins all the time. I got to hear it in my sleep. So what is the one thing that maybe Frederick gets on you about, or that you know that your position is wrong, so we can let Daniel know ahead of time what he's in for?
Oh, slightly jumping ahead of the horse. you know, being in front of the horse just at takeoff. It's just, and it's a nanosecond. It's not horrible. It's not crawling up around the ears or anything like that. It's just a nanosecond of anticipation.
Daniel, are you ready for that challenge?
Hi, Jennifer. Here's the good news. That jumping forward thing, in the video analysis clinic, you'll notice there are some imperfections that are going to be more that require more time to overcome. I'm going to put myself on a limb, and I'm going to say that by the end of the day, it'll be done. I'm going to pretty much guarantee that
wow.
jumping forward thing will disappear, because Jennifer. It's a pretty straightforward, easy thing to overcome. And you'll just, you know what, when you see it on the videotape, Jennifer, it's just so super clear why we do it, what causes it. And if we're clear about the cause of it, then we can overcome it. So Jennifer made such an interesting comment earlier. You know, she says the importance of body awareness. So Jennifer may know that she's jumping forward. Being aware of it is really important, you know, and being aware of it is half the battle. The other half of the battle is muscle memory, you know, and she sort of, you know, hit on that for a second. When we do something over and over and over again for years, that becomes muscle memory. That becomes set in who we are, what kind of rider we are. But in order for us to overcome the muscle memory, we need to be able to increase that body awareness, and one way to do that is to videotape it and watch it. So, you know, Jennifer's always known that she jumped forward, but when we see it on the videotape and we understand the cause of it, we can start to break down that imperfect muscle memory. So anyways, Jennifer, I look forward to that. That's an easy one. That's a piece of cake. That one's gone.
Yeah. Hey, I didn't hear you say anything about a shock collar.
No, but I will carry a big stick, and if you do it after the first 5 minutes, that's it. You're going to get cracked right in the back.
Well, Jennifer, I'm so excited. I've been a fan of Daniel's for quite some time, so I'm so excited to come and see him here in Phoenix, and I've been hoping that we were going to get him for quite some time. He's an awesome guy. He's a great teacher and really explains it, and I've just heard nothing but good things about these clinics. So good job selecting, Daniel. I cannot wait, and we'll see you next week. Good luck at the horse trial.
Oh, thank you very much, and thank you, Daniel and Jennifer, and we'll be seeing you soon.
We'll see you. We'll see you next week, Jennifer. Safe travel.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, I see. That's what I get for having Jennifer, the producer, organize all of my guests now, because they think they're talking to Jennifer. So that's the problem.
There's too many Jennifers, and you and I mentioned that in one of our emails. There's just that particular day, everybody was Jennifer. So
it's so funny, because I actually know Jennifer Miller, and she's going to be like, "Who is this chick named Jennifer that rides this Barb that used to ride before?" I have no idea who that is. And so I'll see her next week. She'll be like, "Oh, okay. Sorry about that." Anyway, let me do a commercial, because we actually have a caller on the air who has a question for you, Daniel. If you don't mind taking, do you mind taking a caller?
Sounds great. I'd be happy to.
Okay, well, we'd like to thank Kentucky Performance Products for sponsoring today's show. And you should choose Kentucky Performance Product Supplements, because the horse that matters to you matters to them. And this week, we're going to talk about Summer Games electrolytes. It's that time of year when the heat is settling in, especially here in Phoenix, is creeping up on us. And we have to think about how much our horses are sweating. So if your horse is sweating, he needs Summer Games electrolytes. Originally created for the horses competing at the Olympic Games, this formulation is a combination of minerals similar to the levels typically lost in sweat. So if you're on the go, try Summer Games Electrolyte Plus Paste. It does contain a dose of Nalox in every tube to protect your horse's stomach under extra stress. Plus, it's going to help your horse recover following exercise. So that's Summer Games Electrolytes from Kentucky Performance Products, and you can find this and all of their products at kppusa.com. That is kppusa.com. Now we're going to head over, Daniel, to our listener, Michelle, on the line. And first of all, good morning, Michelle.
Hi, Jamie. How are you?
We're doing fantastic, and I hear that you have a question for Daniel. So go ahead.
I do. I was just wondering, and Jamie, you may have had this experience too. I have a several students I teach, and it seems that all the beginners always go to the same first show, and they don't mean to need so much time and attention, but they do. And so if I take my own horses, and maybe some of them are young and need a lot of attention as well, it's sometimes hard for me to be able to turn off when to be their coach and when to be directed onto my horse. And I was wondering if Daniel had any suggestions on how to sort of compartmentalize
that.
And maybe it's the same thing. Yeah, don't do it. I know. Maybe it's the same thing for the kids to be able to turn off their parents to be able to focus on their performance.
Hey, great question, and it's interesting how often I hear that question. I think I might have a pretty good answer for you. You know, as a parent, as a trainer, you know, in the same situation that you are, oftentimes we feel like we want to sort of protect the young riders. We want to give them, you know, 120%. But as a father, as a trainer, I figured something out. At some point, we have to take these baby birds and push them out of the nest. You know, we need to be able to see, our, you know, have the tools we've taught them, have they been enough to make them fly, or do they just fall still? You know, and in order for us to figure out whether or not they're going to fall or fly, we got to push them out of the nest. Now, before we do, so I think this is really important. You know, we'll go to a horse show. You know, how do we push them out of the nest? We don't want to just push them without teaching them anything. So, but the teaching has to come beforehand, doesn't it?
Right. Well, you wouldn't take them if they weren't ready.
If you weren't ready, and hopefully, you know, hopefully we have an idea of when we believe that they are ready. So this is what I'd recommend. If possible, teach them a couple of tools beforehand so that when you push them out of the nest, that they have something to fall onto, okay? So here's this is just one example, all right? In preparing for shows and competitions, regardless of what our discipline or sport, as a matter of fact, is, one thing that we need to do is we need to have a way to focus. And this technique really helps, you know, run riders to focus. It's called a cue word. So teach your young riders or teach your riders this cue word. So whenever they start to doubt themselves, they can repeat the word. So, for example, a jumper of mine, every time he jumps, he roaches his back. He really rounds his back. And he also does something called a shotgun release. When we release over fences, we should just shoot the release. The hand should just follow the horse's mouth. But he does a shotgun. He actually will sort of load the release by pulling back. He'll kind of pull back on the mouth before he releases. So it's called a shotgun release because he loads the gun. He goes, chick, chick, boom, and then he shoots. So this jumper jumps with the round back, and he does a shotgun release. So when I take him to shows, I need to remind him constantly to sit up tall, open his chest, flatten his back, and remember when he's jumping, he needs to just release, just follow, not, you know, take before giving or pull before pushing. He needs just to release. So as a coach, I need to tell him all those things, but I've actually taught him to teach himself those things by using a cue word. So the word that he reminds himself to say is the word star. So STAR is a cue word. It's an acronym for sit, tall, and release. So at a horse show, I can go to the horse show, and if I see that he's struggling, and if I see that I want to pull him back into the nest, I can say, hey, remember, be a star. You're a star. What is star? Sit tall and release. You got it. You can do this. Go be a star. So at that point, I can push him out of the nest because I've given him something to fall back on. I've given him a tool. When it comes to these cue words, it's best if they form a sentence. A couple of great ones are a dressage rider. Her cue word is best. I'm going to be my best. So when I take her to a horse show, I just remind her, be your best. For her, BEST stands for balance every single transition. So then she's in the dressage arena, and she's just thinking about her cue word. She's going to balance those transitions. Another rider, she tends to get very nervous. Her cue word is super. I'm going to be super today. To her, S-U-P-E-R is succeed under pressure every ride. So what I ended up doing is I gave them a tool that they can use, but when I take them to a horse show and I see them struggle and I want to pull them back into the nest, I actually push them out of the nest because I'll remind them of the tool that they're going to use to soften their fall or hopefully to fly. I think my favorite cue word of all is lucky. At a recent clinic in Nashville, a young rider was on a monster pony, and there's only two kinds of monster ponies, those that go too fast or those that go too slow. This pony would not move, and this young lady, she's kicking, she's yelling, she's doing everything she can. She comes up to me later, she goes, I've got my cue word. Next time I go to a horse show, I know what to do to get the most out of this horse, out of this pony. And I'm like, what? And she goes, well, my cue word is lucky, L-U-C-K-Y. And I'm like, what does that stand for? She goes, look up, cluck, kick, yell. Okay. So now this young rider, I could take her to a horse show and I could coddle her. I could try and bring her in. I could try and do everything for her. Or I could just give her a little nudge and say, hey, go create some luck. Be lucky. You're a lucky girl. What is lucky? Look up, cluck, kick, yell. You've just reminded yourself the tools that you're going to use today to ride your best. So I guess the answer to the question is we teach the tools in the lessons. Then when we go to the horse show, it's our turn to show that we're confident that the tools they've learned will be enough to allow them to succeed to their potential that day. To do that, teach them tools such as the cue word, such as this acronym. Teach them tools like that in their training so that when they go to the show situation, that they have a tool that they can sort of hang on to, almost like a security blanket. Like, yeah, my trainer's not going to hold my hand anymore, but I'm going to hold on to my cue word.
Michelle, does that help you? Do you get it?
Well, my people will all have words before they hit the end gate this weekend.
Fantastic. Well, thanks, Michelle, for calling in. And we really appreciate you being part of the show. Be a star. Be lucky. Or like my word, Daniel, if I recall, and I can't for the life of me remember what it was, what it stood for, but it was Ra'ua. So that was my word. And you said that it would definitely not make the book. But
No, you know what? I'm just wrapping up the book now. I hope you're not upset. It did not make the book. No, nothing.
It was something about relax and be, you know. But I got to tell you that you have really helped me through. You know, I have a horse that is very nervous. He gets very nervous because he's a rescue and he has had some pretty awful times in his life, and now his time with me is relaxed and happy, and he gets fed every day, and it's just, you know, he gets to have a job, but he also gets a little bit nervous when I take him to these horse trials. And you know, you gave me the idea with doing the word, but I got to tell you what has made me famous in the warm-up arena is the fact that I sing out loud, very loud, to my horse and I. And like you said, you do this song and it's a song that is personal to me, that makes me happy and it makes me relaxed. And I transmit that, you know, to my horse about staying relaxed and happy. So thank you so much for that advice. Is that one that you do have to give a lot to people?
That's you know what, I'll tell you something, Jimmy. That's the number one. That you mentioned, you know, Ernie, you get nervous, so the horse gets nervous. That what's going through our mind goes through our body and then right into the body of the horse. So if what you're thinking, you know, if you're singing, I feel good, na 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 na, there's no way for you to feel bad. You can't sing that song and feel bad.
And if
good things are going through your mind, good things are going through your body and into the body of your horse. So I think, you know what, I don't want to always come back to the same things, but the music, I think we all agree that music has a way of reaching inside of us and pulling amazing things out. Music puts us in a good mood, it motivates us, it pumps us up. And if we're in a good mood, motivated and pumped up, we're going to ride well. That's all there is to it. We just need to be able to make sure that our mind is in the right place. And like you said, you know, singing in a warm-up arena, when half the people in the warm-up arena are saying, don't be nervous, don't be nervous, don't be nervous, and you're singing, I feel good, or whatever your song is, you know. I think that you can see how we set ourselves up for a different level of potential.
I love the fact that, you know, because it just depends on how my horse is behaving and how I'm feeling. What usually happens is he gets nervous in the warm-up because the horses are coming at him, and warm-ups are always just insane places to be riding with horses coming and going and people screaming, outside, inside, jump, vertical, you know, cross rail, whatever. And so he gets really nervous, and so I get nervous because that's the time where he decides that he's a bucking bronco. I'm going to spin, I'm going to rear, I'm going to go back to the barn. And so to me, that's what makes me nervous. I think I'm over the competition nerves. I'm just, the warm-up arena makes me nervous. So because I have chosen a couple different songs for a couple different times, I'll be singing and my coach will come up because, you know, I used to never have a coach at horse trials, and now Barb is like a security blanket for me. Like, oh, Barb, where have you been? Oh, my God, I can't ride my horse without you. So she'll come up and she's like, what are you singing now? And I'm like, oh, this is the Sugarland song, I Ain't Settling. Or then the next time she'll come by, she's like, what song is that? I'm like, Black Eyed Peas, tonight's going to be a good night. You know, like, there's always a different song for different times of whatever I'm going through. So I could actually.
That you have, yeah, it's important you have different songs, you know, because each situation requires a different emotion. You know, so if you, one of my dressage riders, when she needs to calm down, she sings the Lazy Song by Bruno Mars. You know, today I don't feel like doing anything, because you cannot stress out and sing that song. It's impossible, you know. And another, you'll get a kick out of this one, a young rider. And we learn so much from young riders. Another young eventer, his warm-up arena song, I thought this is so great. You reminded me of it when you talked about your – his warm-up arena song is I'm Sexy and I Know It by LMFAO. And it has nothing to do with anything. It doesn't have anything to do with riding. It doesn't have anything to do with staying focused. But you know what it does? It makes him crack up. So he's the only one in the warm-up arena smiling, laughing, cracking up, because he knows that if he's going to ride well that day, he's going to have to love it. You know, we only achieve greatness in something we love doing. I know that my daughter Emma will never be a great broccoli eater because she doesn't like broccoli. Okay? We only get great, we only achieve greatness at things we love doing. And this young rider sings, I'm Sexy and I Know It. And it makes him laugh, it makes him have fun, and it reminds him why he loves doing this, because he's cracking up. I just thought I think that's great. So try that song.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
I love it.
Well, Daniel, we've got another guest on the line, and maybe you will do a better job of introducing Dory Johnson. So why don't you go ahead and do that, and you can welcome her to the show.
Sounds great. But you know what I'm going to do? Because Dory and I are old friends. We go way back. So I could introduce Dory for an hour and a half. However, I do know this. Dory is just like me. She loves talking. So I'm going to let her introduce herself. But I just do want to say that a world-class equestrian and a U.S. coach, but more than that, one of the funniest, most enjoyable, sweetest, kindest person that you could ever hope to meet. Dory also is she's basically my head coach. I have a coaching program where riders around the United States will teach the analysis clinic, the sports psychology seminars that we were talking about. Dory's my head coach and by far my most successful coach. If I could, I'd just like to let Dory introduce herself. She talks as much as I do, so she'll do an awesome job at it. Go for it, Dory.
Well, thank you. That all sounded pretty good to me. I guess my name is Dory Johnson. I grew up in Maryland on my family's farm, and that's actually where I'm right now visiting. And I went through Pony Club for years with the Marlboro Pony Club, and I'm an A Pony Club graduate. I'm a Ride Right certified coach, as Daniel mentioned, and I'm a member of the U.S. World Cup team for polo cross. It's like lacrosse, but on horses. And we went to England last summer for the World Cup and finished fourth, so that was exciting. And I'm thrilled to be coaching a U.S. team for polo cross this year that is headed to the U.K. this summer. So I guess that's a little bit about me.
I remember that you did so much traveling. You know, part of our program is called the Ride Right program. We sort of base it not just on what we've learned, you know, at home here, you know, in the United States or Maryland or California or Florida, but we kind of base it on what we've learned through other experiences, you know, around the world. Dory, I can never, ever invite you to my home to see my children because you're always in another country. You're always in Australia or New Zealand, you know, on exchange programs. Tell us a little bit about those.
Okay. I have gotten to travel quite a bit. I guess in 2004, I got to travel for the first time to Australia playing mounted games. And then since then, I've been to, I've been to New South Wales and Australia a couple times, Victoria for polo cross, and then Western Australia. And the Western Australia trip was incredible. I went there to play on what was called a world team, and they picked different players from around the world to go and play against their top team that they had there. And that would have been a couple of years back, and that was amazing. I lived in New Zealand for probably 4 months a couple of years ago, preparing for the World Cup. And I guess my most recent trip would have been to England, like I said, to the World Cup this past summer. And I loved it, but it rained quite a bit. There was a lot of mud. And now I'll get to go back to England again. But this year, mainly I've just, in the past couple of years, when I'm not traveling internationally, I do travel around the U.S. a lot. I have quite a few students in Minnesota, and I'll be there on Monday. Right now I'm in Maryland. I have a polo cross clinic this weekend, and I'll do actually the equestrian sports psychology seminar. Very excited about doing that Saturday. And then Monday I go to Minnesota where I'll teach my students, and then I head back down to Texas to coach a polo cross tournament, or my team, the U.S. team, at a polo cross tournament there in Hunt. So, yes, traveling, I keep very busy traveling. And I never do seem to make it down.
Yeah. Real quick, Dory, I've got to ask, because saying that you've traveled to all of these places, I almost feel like you've picked up a little bit of an accent at every single one of those places. Where are you actually from?
Okay, I don't know where my accent comes from, because I think you're right. I think I pick it up a little bit everywhere, but I'm from Maryland. I grew up in Upper Marlboro. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, that is so cool. Yeah, you've got, like, the perfect meld of New England / South / Australian / England. It's just a very cool accent. And do people ask you that a lot, where you're originally from?
Yes, and then they say, well, you don't sound like a Marylander. And I tell them, well, my husband's from Texas, maybe it's that. I said, well, I don't know if it's that. And now we live in Louisiana, so... who knows where my voice comes from?
You need to, you know what? You need to just give her a margarita or two, because that adds three extra accents. She's a little Spanish, a little Mexican, a little Puerto Rican in there. You give her a margarita, she's got a couple other accents. It's pretty great.
I do like the margaritas. I didn't realize I spoke Spanish, but maybe. I mean, maybe.
Dory,
would you do us a favor? Because I know Dory as a phenomenal rider. You know, I'm in the at the end of writing my new book. If I could, Dory's picture would be on every page because she's just such a no. But her riding style is just so clean. However, the idea of polo cross might be new to a lot of the listeners. I know what it is, and I know how important it is to be an incredibly well seated rider to play polo cross. Jamie, actually, I have seen pictures where Dory is basically underneath the horse at a hand gallop, like literally reaching
a hand gallop.
Underneath,
we do it flat,
you know?
Out. There's
oh
no
my
hand
God,
gallop.
You're absolutely crazy! It kind of looks like polo. I don't even want to try. Dory, would you help the listeners paint a picture of what polo cross is?
Yes, I probably should have done that right off. Polo cross, it's similar to lacrosse, but on horseback. So instead of hitting the ball, like in polo, it's almost like you're playing croquet, to make it simple. Please don't be offended, polo players. But polo cross, we carry it, and we pass it, and we bounce it, and we shoot goals. And if an opponent is carrying it, then we can hit it out of their racket. Our horses push into each other. Actually, before you guys let me on the air, I could hear you all talking. And, Jamie, you were talking about warm-up and how it freaks you out sometimes. And one of my students gets really nervous in warm-up, too. So I had her start playing polo cross because there's six horses on the field at a time. And her horse is always used to, I know, that's what she said at first, too. We didn't start fast. We started slow. We have, like, novice divisions. Okay. but that way, her horse was used to having five other horses around it all the time. So when she went in her dressage warm-up, she's like, this is a piece of cake. I don't even have this stick in my hand. And so it helped her quite a bit. But back to polo cross, we have three people on a section, And then, like, for the World Cup, we had two sections. We have a women's section and a men's section. And the women will go on, we'll play for 6 minutes, and then we rest while the men go on. And we'll do that 3 or 4 times, and the score will total at the end of it. And each play time is called a chukka. And each player, since I said there's three, we have a number, 1, 2, 3. I know, it's kind of easy. The one scores goals, the two is the midfielder, and the three is the defender. And the two and the three can't score, only the one can score the goals. So I don't know if you all want more detail. I don't want to make it too complicated.
Well, I got a question. How big is the field? Are we talking like basketball court size or like football field size? You know, you got to liken it to like pretty much standard American sports for me to understand.
Yeah, that's okay. It's almost 2 football fields. It's 160 yards. Yeah.
Wow.
But compared to a polo field, so if there's any polo players, we can fit 3 of our fields in theirs. Ours going length to their width. Theirs are much bigger.
What's helped me so much in the past, I understand it, is actually watching it. You know, for more information, Dori, you know, at the World Equestrian Games, she will organize a demonstration, you know, a demonstration of polo cross. So people can come and watch it. And then what I love about Dori, she'll pull, like, big-name people, you know, and take them off their, you know, show-jumping horses, dressage horses, and put the polo cross helmet on them and give them what do you give them, a racket, a stick? What is it?
Yeah, well, it's a racket. We had Clinton Anderson come and ride with us at the World Equestrian Games. That was really exciting. He played on my team, and he actually was pretty good. He said he'd played before, but I hadn't seen him, so some people claim to have played before. But he was great. We put him on a horse and threw him in the game, gave him a racket, and he was scoring goals left and right. But
A lot of people can go. Is there a website or a YouTube video or something where people can go and watch it? Because I know that one thing, Dori, one of her mandates, one of her goals is to help increase the awareness of polo cross. It's such an amazing cross training tool for riders. It's just, I mean, it's fun. It brings you right back down to why we started riding in the first place. It's energetic. It's fun, and then it has this really neat team aspect, which a lot of riding disciplines do not have. So for a lot of, you know, for example, you know, the way I grew up, I actually did play a little bit of polo because as a young man, I was looking for, you know, camaraderie. I was looking for like a team sport with my horse. So is there a place, a YouTube video or something that you could direct people to show them what it looks like so that you can, perhaps we can get more people holding that racket?
Yes. If you go to AmericanPoloCross.org, the American Polo Cross Association has quite a bit of information. And if you YouTube, I want to say it's U.S. World Cup Team, Me and My Gang, there's a very cute video of our team playing with Rascal Flatts music. But if they Google or YouTube Polo Cross, there should be a ton of videos that pop up, and some from the World Cup as well, that will give them a better idea what's going on.
Now,
I don't know how it works,
but
anybody could contact me about it.
Yeah, Dori, we're going to post a video of it on our Facebook page, and anybody can find that at facebook.com/horsesinthemorning. And if you want to go ahead and post something on that as well, you know, if you have a video or something, we would be more than happy to take a look at it, because I want to see this. This is good stuff. Now, Dori, before we let you go, I got it. Mm-hmm. I would be remiss if I did not ask you, do you have any dirt on Daniel?
Oh,
let me think. Well, I've known him for almost 10 years. Do we have dirt on Daniel? He's probably thinking, like, don't say this. You know what? I don't think I do. And we've had him out for a couple margaritas a couple times, but I can't think of anything. He and his family are lovely, so... Not yet.
I'm good at margaritas.
But I'm sure at some point.
I don't get to. But you know what? You know, like Dori said, we've known each other for many years. And, you know, the last time I saw Dori was a couple months ago at the United States Pony Club National Convention. And Dori just took my children. You know, I have 2 young children. Lucas and Emma is 5. She just took them. She just took them.
We went on the stick horse parade.
Kids. Yeah, she put them in the parade. She had them doing face painting. She had them playing polo cross in a convention room. Dori's just solid gold, and I love her. And And, yeah, I have no dirt on Dory either, so.
Good, I was going to say.
All right, going to end this love fest now. Dory, thanks for joining us. We'll put some information about Polo Cross up on our Facebook page, and anybody who wants to see it, including me, can go ahead and check that out. So thanks, Dory.
Yes.
Have a wonderful day, and you can go ahead and email me the dirt on Daniel.
Right.
That'd be fine.
Okay.
Since you didn't want to say it on
the
air.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you guys have a good day, too. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So, I got to play a commercial before we continue. I've got a couple listener emailed questions for you, Daniel, and then I promise I'll let you go. I won't keep you all day long since I'm going to see you next week. Now, you were talking about the clinic. Are you actually going to do a psycho clinic on Sunday here in Phoenix?
I'm going to be doing, I believe I will be doing two psycho clinics on Sunday. Let me, during the break, I'll just check my notes and make sure, you know, what it is I'm doing. But I believe I'm doing two psycho clinics on Sunday. One is called the Playground, and I think the other one I have scheduled is called the Zipper. Neat clinics. Not only are they psycho clinics, but they both have punishment involved. If the riders don't do well, they have to dismount and do sit-ups in the dirt before they go again. So, yeah.
Do that to my kids all the time. I'm like, if you are on the wrong diagonal one more time, it is 10 push-ups. And then they don't forget it again.
Nope,
I don't think anybody's actually done the sit-ups because the threat is enough. So, all right, we're going to play an ad. We'll be right back right after this.
All right.
Let's see what our friend Angela from Horse Girl TV has to say about Equitee's Shaken Fork, the world's best motorized manure fork.
I'm the host of HorseGirlTV.com, Angela Walkup, and I've been using the Equitee Shaken Fork for over 4 years now. It's not only cut my stall cleaning time in half, but likewise my manure pile with less wasted bedding. Less waste saves me money. So I highly recommend both the Shaken Fork and their Flexin Fork, as you can't find better manufacturing on the market today. And remember, you can always tune in, tack up, with HorseGirlTV.com.
Thank you, Angela. You can find the amazing Shaken Fork at EquiteeMFG.com. That's EquiteeMFG.com.
All right, our first listener question is from Colleen, actually, and she wanted to know, what do you think of support aids being bits, boots, martingales, any of that kind of stuff that us riders may throw on our horse?
Oh, right, great. Is this the Colleen that I know? Is this who this is?
It might be.
Be. Okay. The way that you put that, I thought we were talking about a great young coach earlier. So believe it or not, I am quite a fan of natural aids. I do believe that oftentimes riders go a little bit too quickly to artificial aids. For example, the easiest one, let's just go to the bit. Oftentimes I see riders on a horse, the horse is too forward, the horse is too quick, so immediately the rider goes to the handbrake. They immediately go to the bit, the artificial aid of the bit to slow the horse down. Now, what we need to remember is a horse is an animal of two reflexes, fight or flight. Whenever they feel discomfort or threat, they will either fight or flight against it. Oftentimes, when a horse is too fast and the rider goes to the bit, by pulling it, they create the discomfort, the threat, and the horse has two choices and only two choices, fight against it or flight away from it. That's why the horse's head goes up in the air, they twist around, they're trying to get away from it, or they set the jaw, they root down, and they fight against it. In my opinion, in this instance, it's much better to use replace that artificial aid, the bit, with a natural aid, you know, such as a calm voice. So we need to remember, do we really want to slow this horse down or calm the horse down? Most times riders believe they want to slow the horse down, so they go to the bit. I believe that it's, in most situations, it's better to avoid going to that aid, instead remembering the great natural aids that we have, such as a calm voice, relaxing your hip, slowing the motion of your body, because we could tense our jaw, close our legs, tighten our hips, and pull on the bit. Unfortunately, all of those aids are going to encourage the horse to go quicker. So instead of going to the bit, think of the natural aids that we have. Use the calm voice, slow the hips down, relax the hips. Create calmness in the rider so that we can create calmness in the horse. The rider or the horse that is behind our leg, he's too slow. Instead of immediately sticking him with the spur, going to the hook, use our body aid as our body weight as an aid. So increase the movement, increase the range of motion in our hip at the posting trot. Imagine posting up towards the palm a little bit further. Use our natural aids, our God-given aids, what we actually own. Use those aids whenever possible before we go to the more severe artificial aids like the bit and the spur.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that's great. That's good. I'm definitely going to keep that in mind. If I bring my horse out next weekend, I'm going to leave the martingale behind. I'm going to leave the gag bit behind. I'll leave all this stuff behind. You're going to get me nice and fresh. And I hope
so many riders will, the position with the horse's head up in the air. So many riders will reflexively, they'll just try and pull the head down. But what we need to understand is the horse's head carriage starts in his back and in his hind quarter. So with the horse's head that in the air, what I'll do is I'll teach the riders how to soften their seat, because if we're no longer sitting on the horse's back, the horse will no longer want to hollow his back. That'll soften his head carriage. So it's just a good example of we could focus on the imperfection, the carriage of the horse's head, or focus on the cause of it. Just imagine a rider who was in a chair seat. The horse's head will go up in the air because the horse must hollow his back to protect his back. If we can get the rider out of the chair seat, that horse's head will come back down into a better position. So anyways, martingales, not a huge fan of martingales, because I'm pretty sure that we have the tools in our own bodies to help control the horse's carriage.
Well, that kind of leads me into the next question. It's from Penny, and it is, what is the most common rider flaw that you see that has the most negative impact on the horse?
Okay, the most common rider flaw. Let me do this. Let me look at something on the flat, because all riders will go on the flat, even the jumpers, even those disciplined over fences will ride on the flat. I'm going to say that, so this is interesting. I'm going to say that perhaps the most common imperfection that I see in riders would be what we just talked about, breaking the ear, shoulder, hip, heel line. We've all heard that. You know, what I'll do in the video analysis clinic is I'll freeze the rider at the forwardmost portion of the rising trot, the posting trot. At that point, we want to see ear, shoulder, hip, heel. Now, the majority of riders get pretty close to ear, shoulder, hip, heel at the forward portion of the rising trot. Then frame by frame, we bring the riders back to the back portion of the rising trot. I'm going to say about 80% of riders at the back portion of the rising trot, their hips are no longer over top of their heels. Their hips come a little bit further back, causing them to go to a tiny chair seat. So in this instance, the tool that I use when I teach riders to avoid that, going towards the chair seat, the technique is called thumbtacks. Imagine there's thumbtacks sticking out of the cantle of the saddle. And if your hips go too far back and actually compress into the cantle during the rising trot or the canter, if your hips go too far back, then you sit on those thumbtacks. So it's called the thumbtack because you wouldn't want to go back there. So the mental image of riding with thumbtacks helps riders to avoid pressing their hips too far back towards that chair seat. And at the same time, it lightens the weight on the horse. So once again, that allows the horse to rise up to meet us. And that truly is our job as a mounted rider, is to encourage the horse's back, the horse to want to rise up to meet us. Whereas when our hips go too far back at the posting trot, at the canter, for example, then we end up going towards that chair seat. When we're in that chair seat, even if it's minimal, some of our body weight goes onto the horse's back, and it interferes with his desire to want to rise up to meet us. And may cause him to want to, you know, hollow to avoid us. I think the other most common imperfection I see is crookedness. At least 8 out of 10 riders are crooked. And it's not good rider, bad rider. It's just that we're crooked individuals. We're crooked humans. You know, many of us are crooked because we're right or left-handed. The right side of the body is stronger, more coordinated, more balanced than the left side. As a result, however, the right side is also stiffer, stronger, and more injury-prone than the left side of a right-handed rider. Also, our behavior patterns. I see so many young riders go to school with a backpack over one shoulder. If they put that backpack over their right shoulder every day, then the right shoulder will elevate to hold the backpack, and the musculature will change. So because of things like athletic injuries, because of behavior patterns, and because of being one-side dominant, at least 8 out of 10 riders are crooked. And it's just another great thing that we can identify and help to overcome in video analyses. So on the flat, those are the two biggest imperfections that I see. The tendency for riders to move towards that chair seat, and also the tendency for riders to be less than symmetrical.
So, and you think by the video analysis, those things can be addressed?
That's the first step. The first step is identifying it through the video analysis. Then the second step is overcoming that muscle memory. Because so if I have a rider go up center line and I see their hips move more to the right hand side and their left shoulder drop, I could yell at that rider, move your hips over to the left and lift that shoulder. Well, they would do it, but they would feel horrible. They would feel because their muscle memory says what I'm doing right now feels normal. So when
that's
I
crooked,
change
yeah.
that, when I go ahead and tweak it, then now they feel really crooked. So I could tell them to do that. I could say, shift your hips over there, drop that shoulder. I could say that. But then the second I turn around and leave, their body will go back to what feels normal. It will go back to that muscle memory. So the first step is to identify it by seeing it. Then once they've seen it, once they have the perfect proof, then we do that follow-up lesson afterwards, and it's that point, then I say, now shift the hips over there and drop that shoulder. And then I'll say, what do you expect? Expect it to feel wrong, because they know that it's going to go against what feels correct. But they have the visual feedback from half an hour ago on that video analysis to say, hey, even though it feels right, it's not quite as right as it feels, or it's not quite as right as I thought. So the video analysis is the first step for sure.
Well, Daniel, you know, we're going to wrap the show up here, but I want to give everybody the opportunity to, you know, maybe find out where you are, where you're doing clinics, get there, you know, come and audit clinics, sign up for them. But you also have a book called Ride Right, and it is internationally acclaimed. And I guess they can get that book off your website, off Amazon, at a bookstore. Where can they find that?
As a matter of fact, no, they cannot. I'm such a bad salesman. No, they can't. No. That book is now sold out. So Ride Right, it was the number one bestseller in the horse world for quite a while. The first printing sold out, so we immediately did a second printing. That printing also sold out real quick. So we had a choice at that point. Trafalgar Square is my wonderful publisher, and they publish all the world's best. They publish the Danny Emersons and the Sally Swifts and the Linda Tellington Jones and the Jane Savoys of the world. So they just do a wonderful job. However, we did decide after two full sellouts of the first two printings to write a new book. So this is interesting. I'm on word 70,000 of the new book, and I just got an email from Trafalgar Square, and they're like, yeah, but we just wanted it 40,000 to 50,000. So now I'm proofreading it, and I'm bringing it down to where I was supposed to have it in the first place. That was in our contract. So anyways, the new book, we haven't decided on the title yet, but I believe it'll be something along the lines of Our Emotions in Motion. It's a book on equestrian sports psychology, and it's just going to be epic. It's just looking to be a phenomenal book on the mental training of the rider, show jitters, pressure, that sort of thing. So it's going to be on equestrian sports psychology. I don't know the timeline. I have a meeting with Trafalgar Square in July to go over the final book. I'm hoping, I'd love to see it out by Christmas, but please, everybody, do look. It'll be called The Emotions and Motions of Riding, or going Emotions in Motion, something along those lines. But you know, perhaps the best way for the listeners to get more information is just through my website. It's stuartclinics.com, that's plural, so stuartclinics.com. And then if they like, there's a button on my homepage to sign up for my newsletter. So once a month I have an equestrian sports psychology newsletter. And it's got a tip of the month. I answer a question of the month. There's a quote of the month, the joke of the month.
It's a great newsletter. I love getting them.
Oh, good. And then you also notice that there's a list on the cities that I'm in each weekend. So whoever wants to audit a clinic, ride in a clinic, you'll see my list of cities on that newsletter, and then you'll also get to listen to or read some of the answers to the questions of other readers, as well as receive my sports psychology tip of the month. So it's a pretty neat newsletter, and it just goes right to your email inbox.
Well, we do appreciate that. Now, I'm going to play a song out of the show today, but before I let you go, I have to ask you, because I was reading on here, I am actually heading to Andalusia, Spain at the end of May, and I saw in your bio you used to live there.
I did, yeah, for a little over 4 years. Oh, wow, you're sure going to enjoy that. My gosh, wow.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm going to actually ride Andalusians on the beach in Spain.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can I give you a couple? Do you want me to give you a couple of places to go?
Yes, please. We don't have to bore the listeners with it, but I'll call you later. You've got to tell me everywhere I need to go and everything I need to eat and everything I need to try, because we're going to be there for 2 weeks. So.
Good. You'll Google horse stuff, and they'll tell you the three best things to do, but they won't tell you the three better things to do, because when you live there, they invite you in. They're an amazing people. They invite you in, and they'll show you some things that are off the beaten track, and those are the ones that are knockouts. There's a very famous show, you know, the Royal Andalusian Show in Jerez, Spain, and it's amazing. You have to see it, but there's another one that's better. That nobody knows about. Yep, there's another one that's better. I'll email it to you, because you can't miss it. It's you're in a stadium, you're so close that you will actually get mud in your face when the horses gallop by you. It's just the most amazing show. So I'll send you information about that, plus a couple of barns you might want to consider going. Rafael Soto, Olympic silver medalist, teaches open lessons at a clinic or open lessons at a stables, beautiful stables just outside of Jerez as well. So
that's,
I'll send you
a place that he teaches at. I'm going to be at, I got the thing on equitrekking.com. We booked the equestrian vacation. Rafael comes and teaches at this barn that we're going to be staying at. So I am so excited. I'm glad you're going to give me some of the underground places to go. I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic. And thank you, Daniel. I just can't thank you enough for being a part of the show today and taking, I know you're so busy, but taking some time and spending it with us here. And I did find on eBay 3 Ride Right books available internationally. They're in the United Kingdom, so you have to pay for the extra shipping. But if you want to track one of those down, you can go ahead and find it on eBay overseas. So good luck with that. They're probably going to sell out in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
But we'll look up your book. And I want to play a song out of here, and I want to dedicate it to you because it is – it's a very important song to me, and I want to also dedicate it to Amy Tryon and her friends and family, because it kind of embodies her. And the song is written actually by Clayton Fredericks and performed by Clayton Fredericks, to the Australian inventor. And the song is called Will to Win, and I absolutely love it. So I'm going to hit the play button here, Jennifer. I'll go ahead and hit the play button. And this is Will to Win, Clayton Fredericks. Daniel Stewart, thank you so much for being a part of the show today. Everybody, please go to stewartclinics.com and find out anything you want to know about Daniel.
All right. Thanks, Jamie. Great day.
All right. Thank you.
When you know that you got what it takes, what a difference a feeling makes. And when everyone's dreaming the dream, then you've got the will to win. When the moment is finally
And don't forget, spay, neuter, and geld. Peace.